Okay, friends, hello. I had one false start there. We're beginning with light, not light, I always want to say that, Laws of the Soul, webinar commentary number 16, Esoteric Psychology 2, page 144. And I may have said we were going on to 15 in the last program, but it is 16 after all, and we're in the middle of the sixth ray method of service. And in order to make the bridge to the material that's coming up in this second paragraph on the sixth ray, I want to read the sixth ray paragraph that we already dealt with just for the sake of continuity. The effect of the activity of this ray during the past 2,000 years has been to train humanity in the art of recognizing ideals, which are the blueprints of ideas. They are, as it were, a precipitation of the idea, and they have connected with them a strong aspiration, an aspiration towards these precipitations and the desire to precipitate them further into the world. The main work of the disciples on this ray is to capitalize on the developed tendency of humanity to recognize ideas and avoiding the rocks of fanaticism and the dangerous shoals of superficial desire, train the world thinkers so ardently to desire the good, the true, and the beautiful, that the idea, which should materialize in some form on earth, can shift from the plane of the mind and clothe itself in some form on earth. These disciples and servers work consciously with the desire element in man. They work scientifically with its correct evocation. Their technique is scientific because it is based upon a right understanding of the human material with which they have to work. The masters possess this understanding, and I've dealt with this first paragraph in the previous program, number 15. Okay, now I want to go on and take the second part and of the discussion of the sixth ray method of service. Excuse me. Some people have to be galvanized into activity by an idea. This is more the first ray type, perhaps. We remember where the enunciating disciple on the first ray comes forth with the true idea, which is perhaps not yet accepted and made into an ideal by the sixth ray types, nor is it even precipitated into an accessible thought form by the third ray types, or rendered attractive by the second ray. Notice how very much we are speaking of service in the realm of ideas, whether that term idea means a pure being on the cosmic ethers, or whether it means a kind of a higher mental arrangement of that pure idea in a form which can be more accessible to the intuitively unawakened minds of many. So some people have to be galvanized into activity by an idea, and with these, the first ray disciple can be effective because they see the broader picture and why the idea's time has come and what the long range development of the expression of the idea will bring. Others can be reached more easily by an ideal and will subordinate their personal lives and wishes to that ideal. Perhaps they don't have as full an understanding of the idea that is behind this ideal, but they find the ideal very desirable and they are willing to sacrifice much, even their life, on occasion to see that ideal materialized. We see so much of that going on in the world today, for good and for ill. With these, the sixth ray disciples the sixth ray disciple works with facility. And this he should endeavor to do, teaching men to recognize the truth, holding steadily before them the ideal, that which is to be achieved and towards which a great aspiration is directed, restraining them from too energetic and fanatical display of interest in the need of the long pull. So the sixth ray disciple teaches people to recognize the truth and holds the ideal steadily before them so they do not lose sight of it and can pursue it in a one-pointed manner, but not too fanatically or energetically, because the true sixth-ray disciple who has the sixth-ray soul and plenty of experience will realize that it's easy to expend too much energy and become too fatigued to follow through. The sixth ray, it should be remembered, when it constitutes the personality ray of man. See how he always discusses the rays in question here, both as the soul ray and as the personality ray. And obviously, when it's the personality ray, there is not as wise or comprehensive a use of the ray. The sixth ray, when it constitutes the personality ray of a man or a group, can be far more destructive than the first ray. The first ray is wiser, sees less emotionally, sees clearly in a less biased manner, is a realist, sees things how they are, whereas the sixth ray tends to exaggerate or minimize and in any case glamorize the vision. So when it is the personality ray of a man, the sixth ray can be far more destructive than the first ray, presumably when the first ray is either the soul ray or the personality ray. For there is not so much wisdom to be found. I think that is the key here. Remember, we're dealing with a ray of aspect when we're dealing with the first ray, and it is, in a way, one of the abstract rays which has gathered from the lesser rays much experience, especially from the fifth ray and the seventh ray, both of which resolve onto the first ray. There's not so much wisdom to be found, and as it works through desire of some kind, it is following the line of least resistance for the masses, because the masses are emotionally polarized. So the sixth ray works through desire of some kind. It is following the line of least resistance for the great majority of people who are kamically polarized or kama-manasically polarized, and can therefore more easily produce physical plane effects. It's closer to the physical plane, and we do realize that when there is sufficient intensity of desire, there will be a precipitation onto the physical plane. Sixth-ray people need handling with care. I assume he's speaking largely of sixth-ray personalities, but he could also speak of the soul types if they do not have sufficient experience. They need handling with care, for they are too one-pointed and too full of personal desire, and the tide of evolution has been with this type for a very long time. So there is a great momentum built up, and a kind of a line of least resistance has been created. But the sixth-ray method of evoking desire for the materializing of an ideal is indispensable, and fortunately there are many aspirants and disciples on this ray available today, because how else than to lift the masses? And the masses do need lifting towards a more an ideal which represents truth rather than some fanciful possibility, such as eternal duration in an eternal heaven following the ending of a particular incarnation. Really, reincarnation is so indispensable, it has to be proved, and the manner in which it is proved is probably not yet available. There are many who believe it, you know, through hypnotism or their own personal experience, or just because of the logic of it, or because of the report of reliable teachers and souls. But there are so many who do not, and they are tired, and they do not want the vision held before them of tens and hundreds of life cycles, even though those cycles lead on to something which is far more glorious than human nature at the present time can ever be. So we do fight that need, that request for rest in some heavenly world, and not just periodic rest, but eternal rest. Okay. Well, there is a form of rest in the Devachan world, but it is cyclic rest, and I'm sure there comes a time when there's an eagerness to return to another incarnation, because it is realized what the stakes are, and that evolution lies in that direction and cannot be achieved unless there is a return. This will be the wisdom of the soul, which is going to be realized between incarnations. So we have had then some discussion of the sixth ray servers, and we have seen that they are actually indispensable, and they work through the scientific evocation of desire, and so many human beings can be reached by stimulating desire until it becomes aspiration, and even very high souls can be reached in this way as well, but they will also want to know what is the idea behind the ideal which is held before them. As for the third factor in this series, the idol, they realize it simply as a symbol, and they are not inclined to be captivated by an idol because their experience is greater. It's so interesting that there have been certain religions who, when they look at Hinduism or perhaps Buddhism, they accuse it of idolatry, thinking that the devotees and the followers of these religions are so stupid that they think that the actual form in front of them is the real God and not a symbol of something hidden. In fact, what is being revealed here is the concrete state of mind of the ones... Yes, sorry for that cough. What is being revealed here is the concrete state of mind of those who are the critics, because it is the critics themselves who are more likely to look at the idol as if it were real and to project their own tendency onto others, when in fact the Hindus and the Buddhists are far more subtle in their mentality than their critics. This has to be realized. It's always the way that those of lower development project their own limitations and liabilities upon those of higher development, and it simply has to be lived through. Well, we're not about to be done with the sixth ray, even though the sixth ray souls will be out of incarnation largely. There's always a sprinkle here and there, I suppose. But largely out of incarnation by the year 2020, 2125 or 2130, somewhere around there. I suppose at the great conclave of 2125 would be my guess that they would be largely removed by that time. But as I said, the six-ray monads will continue to express, and that the six-ray will come through them, even into the physical plane in some measure. And six-ray personalities, it seems to me, there will necessarily have to be. After all, the masses of people are very much in that stage of emotional polarization. And when you think of it, Aquarius does stimulate quite a bit of idealism and will stimulate the emotional vehicles of quite a few people. And this will be well correlated, I think, with the idealism of the six-ray. So we will find the six-ray continuing within the astral body, and I suspect within the personality, even though the ashram itself, well, the ashram may somewhat continue, because I think there are as many as, how many sub-ashrams are there for the six-ray ashram? Maybe four, maybe three or four. So the ashram will not dissolve, and somewhere in the Aquarian age there will be a manifestation of the sixth ray. We cannot say exactly when it will be, but I don't imagine that it will be out of incarnation for the entirety of the some 2,000 years, 2,160 years, that the Aquarian Age endures. Okay. Well, I think we get the idea that these types of servers arouse the aspiration, not only of the masses, but even of the world thinkers, so that they ardently, on fire, in a fiery manner, in a burning, relentless manner, desire the good, the true, and the beautiful, are highly motivated, therefore, will move towards it one-pointedly, and will lift themselves through this fire beyond their present state of development. Then we move on to the seventh ray. The servers on the seventh ray. This ray provides at this time an active and necessary grouping of disciples who are eager to aid the plan, and especially on the dense physical level of life, because they are the workers in the furthest world, as they are called, in the Blessed One stanzas, I believe. Their work lies naturally on the physical plane. And this is the seventh time, we are told, in the fifth root race, that the seventh ray, a processional cycle, has corresponded with the Aquarian processional cycle. It seems that in these processional cycles, all of the ray appearances last for about the same amount of time. The sixth ray lasts throughout the processional cycle, as it has during the age of Pisces. The seventh ray will last throughout the processional cycle, which features Aquarius. That doesn't mean that these processional cycles necessarily go in order, 5, 6, 7, and so forth. There is a certain continuity at this time, which is unusually useful for materializing the ideal. The materialization will come through the seventh ray and has been prepared through the sixth ray, which was devoted to various forms of ideals during the Piscean Age. So, anyway, their work lies naturally on the physical plane. They can organize the evoked ideal, which will embody as much of the idea of God as the period and humanity can evidence and produce on Earth. Never the entirety of the idea can manifest, because there are always, presently at least, these manifestations or limitations within the manifested form. But there will be less and less of these limitations, and more will the idea of God be able to be manifested through the ideal. And, you know, during the sixth ray age, D.K. has told us that there's been tremendous disorganization of human affairs, because the sixth ray is simply not an organizing ray and is likely to spurn outer forms and activities, unless, of course, the seventh ray is represented along with it. But now an organization of the right rhythmic application of the ideal, based upon the reception of circumstance, or the possibility of circumstance to receive those energies, will go forward with the increasing power of the seventh ray. So that which the sixth ray type dreamed about during the age of Pisces is much more likely to manifest during the seventh ray age, not fanatically, but more proportionally, we might say. The momentum that we have, we have an idealism which has been generated during the age of Pisces, and there will be a momentum that is carrying over into the age of Aquarius, even though the sixth ray will not be so powerfully represented during that age. So they can organize the evoked ideal, which will embody as much of the idea of God, that which the planetary logos seeks to see manifested, as the period, with its various available energies, and humanity, with its present condition, can evidence and produce in form upon the earth. It's one thing to appreciate an ideal and to wish to see it manifested, but can it actually be brought forward in form? That is the seventh ray's task. Their work is potent and necessary and calls for much skill in action. And when you see that phrase, skill in action, it is very much indicating a seventh ray way of working. Interestingly enough, in the letters which represented the keynotes of Alice Bailey's life, DRS, the S was for skill in action. I think the D was for detachment and the R was for rest. It's interesting, we just read that one will not seek rest. I will forego peace, I will forfeit rest. And yet D.K. so often advised his disciples that the due rhythmic rest is as much a part of their service as the full-on activity, the Rajas aspect, which they are very accustomed to. So much skill in action, much refinement of technique, much caution and measurement in the application of energy to the existing conditions. The new rhythms are applied to the old rhythms, but not in such a way that the friction is so severe that it will either destroy the old rhythms and not allow the new rhythms to manifest or render the new rhythms futile. So there has to be a kind of an accommodation, and you will often find a great caution among the seventh ray types. They are so often involved in what we might call security work, you know, guarding of buildings and places, and they check and they double check to make sure that everything is secure on the physical plane. This obviously takes a lot of caution. This is the ray that is coming into power. I think ever since Sir Francis Bacon manifested as a harbinger of the coming seventh ray, this ray has been growing in its expression, and especially it really came in, I think, in 1675, according to what the Tibetan has said on Esoteric Psychology 1, page 126, 1675, but there are four runners of the ray, I think, before the ray actually appears. Maybe that's the case with the fourth ray, which will make its monadic appearance in 1925, but ever since, 2025, but ever since 1924, since that cycle ended, cycles about which we really know nothing, he mentions the beginning and ending of cycles that he has not really discussed, ever since that has been coming into increasing power. Maybe as kind of a forerunning certain fourth-ray types, forerunning the more general entry of fourth-ray types after the year 2025. You kind of wonder whether DK's next exposition, his next sequential teaching, will have more that will appeal to the fourth ray souls who will be entering incarnation. Maybe he will be trying also to speak to them in some degree, even as he has spoken to first ray, second ray, sixth ray, even third ray types at this time. None of these ray participants in the hierarchical crusade, that's a sixth ray word, today can really work without each other, and no group can carry on alone. So in whatever age, the representation of all rays is needed, even the sixth ray in the seventh ray age, even though he warns of some trouble and misunderstanding. Because, of course, the sixth ray just has this glamour of interference and not really a good sense of timing because it's so impulsive, and the seventh ray is all about timing and rhythm. So right there is a cause for friction. The difference between the methods of the old age and that of the new can be seen expressed in the idea of leadership by one and leadership by a group. And it's a delicate matter because the values coming from both types of leadership have to somehow be preserved. I'm thinking, you know, we're in transitional times right now, and so the leadership by one still exists. But even in the age of Aquarius, DK has told us Leo will be very powerful, and there will appear dynamic individuals who are centers of the group life. So it has to be a balance between the nucleus and the sphere of activity. And this is the case within the ashram. I mean, the master, of course, will have the final word. And the question is there leadership by one, or is the group mind also a leading factor in the life of the ashram? Well, perhaps increasingly within humanity, the central figure will have what is called a servant leadership and will not be in that position of authority for any reason having to do with self-aggrandizement or the love of power, but will be there as a server and facilitator, and this will be recognized by the members of the group. So even though he talks about leadership by a group, we have to understand what that might really entail. It's not that the nucleus of the cell disappears. It's the difference between the imposition of an individual's response to an idea upon his fellow men and the reaction of the group to the idea. So it's very important that all the different points of view be represented. And I think in the Native American circles, with the passing of the talking stick, as I understand it, all points of view were taken into consideration by the leader of the group. Everyone had his say, and the prevailing group impression did emerge, and with that the leader had to reckon. So it is the difference between the imposition of an individual's response to an idea upon his fellow men and the reaction of the group to an idea. And the group reaction, the group aura, the group magnetic aura of the entire new group of world servers becomes very important. There certainly is no specific leader of the new group of world servers, although the ashramic structure does involve a kind of leadership, but at the same time there is unanimity of vision within the ashram. So it is a more advanced stage in which we have an emergent nucleus. After all, there is a hierarchical structure within hierarchy, obviously, and Sanat Kumara is the king, and yet he somehow is within all the different points of view and takes into himself the registration of those various points of view, which in a way is the registration upon emanations of himself. And that's maybe a peculiar idea, but he is substanding every other being, which, as it were, takes its life from himself as the emanating source. And all monads are, in a way, part of him. So as they are extended into the world, they will be variously impressed, and he is able to reckon based upon that impression. And the master, too, seeks the impression that comes to those who are more in the field than he is when preserving his normal high state of consciousness. And he takes these things into consideration. So this produces producing group idealism, and focalizing it into definite form, carrying forward the emergence of the idea without the dominance of any one individual, carrying forward the emergence of the idea without the dominance. Well, we've learned about dominance and what it can mean. It can mean the stifling of that aspect of the divine will, which is the special possession of each unit. So totalitarianism is all based upon dominance of a single perspective. DK has told us in regard to the Second World War that the big objective was not the defeat of any one country per se, but the defeat of totalitarianism per se, the regimentation of the great variety of the manner, ways in which the will of God would be expressed, the defeat of that which would regiment those varieties of ways. So we have to look to each person, each individual, for his particular gift, and not impose upon that person in any such way that the gift will fail to emerge, because what we impose is so powerful that it restricts the emergence of the gift, that gift being an aspect of the divine will. Well, this is the major task today of the seventh-ray disciple. And to this end, he must bend every energy. So to create the true organism, we might say, to facilitate the creation of the true organism, and not the organization per se, with all of its criticism and its lower ego issues. There is the sense in which, looking at the coming age of Aquarius, Leo must be balanced with it. It's always a duality. So we would fail to have the proper type of Aquarian age unless the opposing energy, which is really one with Aquarius, that is the Leo energy, were reckoned with and allowed due scope for expression. He has said that there will emerge powerful individuals in relation to groups during the Aquarian age. I remember the Dane Rudyard said, well, it's not just the age of Aquarius that's coming. He was, as we know, a great astrologer. It's the age of Aquarius Leo, just the way the foregoing age is the age of Pisces Virgo, and we certainly have seen the power of Virgo, the power of the mind emerge, and we see the whole approach and understanding of the Virgin Mary brought forward in Catholicism in relation to Virgo. We find Paris partially ruled by the sign Virgo, and the great Notre Dame cathedral found in that city. So there are many Virgo expressions of energy to be found in the age of Pisces. So let us always look at an age as a dual age and not discount the opposite. Perhaps the worst excesses of the opposite will be somewhat negated, but there will be the need for the values of the sign opposite the processional sign for those values to emerge. So he must speak those words of power. He has particular ability with magical words and words of power. And I know some rules, some magical controls, some words of power. We are told in relation to the seventh ray techniques. He must speak those words of power which are a group word. So he listens to all and synthesizes the many perspectives. I have a friend who's very skillful in doing group work, and he always says, building upon what X, Y, or Z has said, I will add, and so forth. Not X, Y, or Zodiac, okay, X, Y, or Z. But always building upon what others have said, so taking into consideration what the group is saying through its many individuals. So he must speak the word of power, which is a group word, and not simply an individually dominating word, not simply the dominating word of one individual, and embody the group aspiration in an organized movement. And I suppose this organized movement forward, a progressive event under the planet Uranus, the seventh-ray planet, because organized movements are under Uranus. The word organism will soon emerge here, I think. If not here, at least it will be suggested. The group aspiration in an organized movement, which is, it will be noted, quite distinct from an organization which involves, I think, a lot of Saturn and can be a very crystallized structure which is not adaptable and which tends to defend itself against progress. It has a certain inertia to it because it's ruled by rotary motion, we might say, or perhaps it's driven forward by the will of the one at the top, but increasingly organizations are, the very successful ones are more fluid, and so many ideas are coming into them from the personnel within them. So there is a grassroots movement within organizations which bring the organization closer to the ideal of the organism. A striking instance of the use of such a word of power being enunciated by a group has lately been given in the Great Invocation, which has been used with marked effect. Of course, the masters will see what that marked effect is because they can see the inner and more real effect, and we will simply see the outer evidences, but of course it has been spreading to well over 100 countries, and it's probably translated, it is translated into many, many languages. So it has been used to marked effect, and it is an ancient, abiding word of power stored within Shambhala, and it is emerging, I think, at this time, because we have the combination of the seventh ray and Aquarius emerging. It should continue to be used, for it is the inaugurating mantram of the incoming seventh ray. And I thought he was going to say of the incoming new age of Aquarius. I think he might as well say that as well. This is the first time such a mantram has been brought to the attention of humanity, and especially through the sacrifice of the Christ, who agreed at great cost to reappear physically for another 2,000 or so years during the age of Aquarius. Rudolf Steiner, I think he wrote a book called Christ in the Etheric, and maybe it was not entirely decided whether there would be a complete physical demonstration of the Christ. Maybe the etheric plane would have been as low as he would go, but no, at great sacrifice in the year 1945, and perhaps a decision was made over the preceding nine-year period, and perhaps an aspect of his seventh initiation was involved in that in 1943, a decision was made, and that decision induced or made it possible for the Lord of the world to give this great word of power, the third stanza of the Great Invocation, to humanity for broad and general use. And DK says the first time that such a mantram has actually emerged, and it is producing monumental results. Well, that is the discussion of the seven ray methods of working, and may we, find a way to find ourselves within those methods. The way that the methods are described are not always easy. I'm thinking I pondered for a long time over the second ray method of working until I really understood it. They're not entirely straightforward. They're sometimes a bit different than what we may have suspected. Along with these seven methods of service, we should read as well the description of the 10 seed groups found in Discipleship in the New Age, Volume 2. All these rays work today for the carrying out of a specific group idea of seven masters, we might say particularly seven Chohans, through their picked and chosen servers, who through their picked and chosen servers are actively participating in the work which is the initiator work. Initiator, or is it initiatory? I'm not sure here. I've begun to sometimes doubt that every word in the CD-ROM is correct. As a matter of fact, we've seen that it's not. We run into mistakes in the transference. But in any way, the initiator work of the seventh ray, initiatory work of the seventh ray. So these seven shohans, or seven heads of the major ashrams, they work with these seven rays, and the rays are used to carry out seven group, specific group ideas. And the masters are working through certain representatives, through certain other masters and high initiates and disciples and aspirants to bring their particular group idea into expression. So we might say the specific group idea of each master is coming into expression through his chosen representatives. It is also linked up with the incoming Aquarian influence. The great seventh ray, in a way, will subsume all the other rays, and at this time it is intimately related to the Aquarian influence. So the appearance of all these rays in the right manner, in the rightly balanced manner, and the rightly timed manner according to ray cycles is necessary for the proper work which is to be accomplished during the Aquarian cycle. The masters, with their large group of disciples functioning on all the five planes of human unfoldment, including, I suppose, the atomic plane, have studied minutely their accepted disciples. Well, all right, they know the quantities they are dealing with, don't they? They know the material they are dealing with, the human material, as it were. The master is, in a way, the monad of the ashram. And so the disciples are found ranged on the five lower planes, particularly, and can be studied on all those planes. The ashram will include many from on different levels, and including some, I suppose, who are even focused on the, well, especially on the buddhic plane, but also on the atmic plane. Others focused on the higher mental plane, and still others focused more on the concrete mental plane, as it is responsive to the higher mental plane. I imagine that in the ashram, no, there will not be those who are strictly focused on the astral or mental plane, astral or physical plane, although they may find their service there. So they have studied minutely their accepted disciples, the disciples under supervision and not yet accepted, and the aspirants of the world. Minutely in all cases. Well, okay. This is quite a task for the master. It seemed that Master DK talked about the expenditure of energy, which had to come from him if he was going to study those he attracted into his outer groups and whose instructions can be found in discipleship in the New Age. But let us say they have ways of studying initiates, disciples, and aspirants which are not accessible to us, and probably if we are working intimately with their work, we have had the eye upon us, and our capabilities, qualities, and liabilities are known. So they have studied minutely their accepted disciples, the disciples under supervision by a chela in the light, we might say, a higher chela who supervises the chela in the light and reports to the master. The disciples under supervision and not yet accepted, so that would be the second category. The third category is the accepted disciple, the second is the chela in the light, and the aspirants of the world who tend to be more little chelas or even at a stage earlier than that. They have selected a number of them to weld together into a group upon the outer physical plane. And Master DK certainly did this with four or five groups in the earlier effort, and then one larger seed group of 24 in his effort that he undertook largely in the 1940s. So this is going on in different ashrams, not only Master DK's ashram, and DK noted in Discipleship in the New Age that it was going on, but without particular success, really. I guess it's early days yet, and the material with which the master has to work is not maybe entirely suitable to the task. The basis of this selection is sensitivity to the Aquarian influence. I imagine he would not want to incorporate the Pisceanly polarized disciple. Willingness to work in a group as an integral part of the group and having no idea of personal ambition or any wish to be a leader. Well, he incorporated into his group some who were leaders in other groups. Did they leave that ambition at the door? Well, we don't know in every particular case. Some of them were actually outstanding leaders, but within the groups, Master DK himself was the leader. He was the 10th point within the group of 9. And maybe in a group of 24, he was the 25th point in some manner. So no idea of personal ambition or any wish to be a leader. Where the desire to be a leader exists, that disciple is automatically, though only temporarily, disqualified from this particular endeavor. Of course, people do have leadership qualities and they do emerge, but those qualities are subordinated to the welfare of the group, and certainly there is not what you would call the dominance of any particular individual. I think the way he set his groups up, that particular type of tendency towards dominance was quite successfully excluded, even though in other and outer groups the individuals assembled may have been in some ways dominating leaders. He can still do good work, but it will be secondary work and more closely affiliated with the old age than with the work of the new group of world servers. And I suppose all of us should question, you know, whether the work we are doing is primary or secondary based upon this particular qualification, that there is no idea of personal ambition, no idea of personal ambition or any wish to be a leader. So sensitivity to the Aquarian influence will bring you into such a master's group, and a willingness to work as an integral part of the group and not as any sort of ambitious or dominating leader, and a dedication that holds nothing back that can be rightly given. Of course, that's very important, because you can't give away that which slights others who have the right to your karmic attention. You know, it's like the person who begins to raise a family and then goes out to save the world and neglects the family. Alice Bailey certainly emphasized that discipleship has to begin in Bethlehem, right in the home, and she proved that that could be done because she rightly raised her 3 children and at the same time carried on a work that would probably stagger 5 other people at the same time. And then, as well, a harmlessness which, though not yet perfected, exists at least as an ideal towards which the aspirant is constantly striving. So what are the qualities here? Aquarianism and group cooperation with no ambition, right dedication, and a growing harmlessness. These make it possible to be incorporated into such groups as the master assembled in his preliminary efforts, and you know, it seems quite clear that he will be one of the externalizing masters. He has some connection, strong connection with the physical plane. He said all healers do, and they were selected into the healing group because of their, well, I don't know if it was a physical polarization, but some closer connection with the physical plane. Sometimes when you know, look at the image that has been accepted as a good likeness of Master DK, there seems to be quite a bit of the sign Taurus there as well, which would bring him out into the physical plane, and certainly in terms of the kind of light that he has been spreading, not only Gemini seems to be present, but the sign Taurus could as well be, although that's simply a theory. In this work, many can have a part. The law of service has been thus outlined in an endeavor to make one of the most esoteric influences in the solar system somewhat clearer in our minds. Well, after all, it does come from the Lord of the constellation Aquarius. And so it is imposed upon Shambhala, imposed upon the planet. It is deeply esoteric. And our solar logos, I think, is under that impression, although simply because Aquarius is potent in relation to our planetary logos because of the alignment of our planetary vernal equinox doesn't mean that the entire solar system is having an Aquarian age, though I do think there are those ages for the entire solar system. What the present age may be covering the entire solar system, I can't be sure. There have been, you know, some speculations, and I think some have said, well, there's kind of an Aquarian age for the entire solar system as well. I call you to service, but would remind you that the service here discussed will only be possible when we have a clearer vision of the goal of meditation and learn to preserve during the day the attitude of inner spiritual orientation. Let's just say that the attitude of the spiritual attitude, the subjective attitude, is ever the one that is needed. We cannot forget the necessity for subjective service. Remember, he told us that aspirants and disciples serve in a different way, than the ordinary motivated server, and that it would be soul service that would relate to the inner qualities, to the soul of those served, and not so much to the rearrangement of the outer form. Though, you know, when you look at a great server like Father Damien, you realize that he had to serve the souls of his flock, who were greatly distressed, diseased, and also had to be very practical in the outer type of service that he gave. I'm remembering that, you know, the lepers he was serving, many of them had lost their legs. You know, they could not stand. He made adaptations in the floor of the church so that somehow the legs that they had would fit into those vessels and allow them to attend the service in that way. Very practical, and he did have strong Taurus and Capricorn, which really contributes to a practical manifestation upon the physical plane. So, but we have to, in relation to the service, the kind of service here discussed, have a clearer vision of the goal in meditation, become more adept at meditation, and learn to preserve that inner spiritual meditative attitude and orientation throughout the day. And as we learn to obliterate and to efface out of our consciousness, ourselves as the central figure in our life drama, you know, the field of consciousness is there, but are we a great big, as Master Moria calls the ego, lower ego, a ball of fat? Are we a great ball of fat in the very center of our field of consciousness, or have we shrunken down to a point which can fit through the needle's eye? So we have to obliterate the consciousness of the lower self as the central figure in our life drama. This is such a hint, really. Take our eyes off our personal self. There's something about this which is really descriptive of what must be done. Okay. Obliterate and efface out of our consciousness ourselves as the central figure. This is a great attitude of decentralization. It's one of the four or five D's that are so important. Discipline, detachment, dispassion, discrimination, decentralization. We have to, and this is the great gift of Aquarius, because it is truly the most decentralized sign. There is no center in it. Perhaps the Aquarian, above all, can realize that God is an intelligible sphere whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. Well, then and then only can we measure up to our real potentialities as servers of the plan. Of course, he talked about the plan first, and then those whom the plan serves, and then those who serve the plan. I think you can see that the reading and the rereading of this particular law is really important, really valuable, because we are here to follow in the footsteps of the Christ and to learn the lesson that he sought to teach, to bring this law of service truly to humanity. There had been enlightenment, there had been great understanding before him, but before he came, these higher energies which would lead to true service, to the true harmonizing on the physical plane and to the emergence of the planetary soul on the physical plane in the right geometry of right relations, these had not been experienced. Well, friends, we've gone through that law. Our next law will be the law of repulse. Yes, and there we have already done some work, which I, and quite a number of programs, which I will not repeat. But so far what we have here is the end of Laws of the Soul, webinar commentary number 16, page 146. And we'll be beginning on Laws of the Soul webinar commentaries number 17 and into the Law of Repulse with page 147. I love those laws of repulse. You know, they are on the first ray, and they are the first laws of the soul in which the spiritual triad is actively involved. And there is a scattering and dispersing energy involved with this law, and really, though, an aspect of the law of love, as I have discussed in relationship to it. I think maybe a year ago or a bit more, I made those programs. I'd like to end this particular hour-long program, with the sounding of the Great Invocation, and that will bring us just about to 1 hour. And then later we'll go on with the Law of Repulse, and I'll ask you to interpolate the work that has already been done, maybe, I don't know, how many programs, I suppose, well, 6 or 7 programs on the stanzas of the Law of Repulse. I'll ask you to interpolate them into your study. Okay, so this is the Great Invocation, bringing us to the end of the study of the Law of Service. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Oh. Okay, friends, thank you for studying this material. There's a lot of study to be done, many lifetimes of study, many lifetimes. And we'll begin with Laws of the Soul, webinar commentary number 17 on the law of repulse. We'll see you then.